Yeah, so we were discussing Derech Agav, the Mason that Yechezkel revived, and there were different opinions. One opinion said it was a mashal, it never really happened, it was just a prophetic dream. And the other opinion said they were the Bnei Ephraim, the people from the tribe of Ephraim, who left Egypt 30 years earlier without Moshe Rabbeinu, and they thought that they would get to Eretz Yisrael, and they were killed on the Derech. And now we have a third view, and according to that, they were Zocha to a Tchias HaMesim, and according to one opinion, see, in other words, like this, you have two different machloks, and one is, did it really happen, or was it a dream? If it really happened, who were they? One opinion says Bnei Ephraim. But then you have another machlokes. Were they revived and they immediately died? Or were they revived? They actually came to Eretz Yisrael, they got married, they had children, and remember who the Bambaseira stood up and said, these are the tefillin of my grandfather who was one of those Mason, and this is what he left me. But now we have another opinion who they were, and this is actually very interesting. Shmuel Amar. Right, so who was the one that said the Bnei Ephraim? That was that Rav? 1 second. Yeah, Rav. So Rav says they're the Bnei Ephraim. Shmuel says, Elu Bnei Adam Shekafru B'tchias HaMesim. Quite amazing. These were people who denied Tchias HaMesim. They didn't believe it. Not Bnei Ephraim. They were just Jews who denied Tchias HaMesim. And just to show them that they were wrong, so that might apply to everybody who's kaifer, Hashem revives them temporarily, so they see that they're wrong, and then they die right away. So they experience a momentary tchias hamesim, which is not really a bracha, if anything's going to hurt them more, and then it's taken away from them. So they will be makir the emes, they'll be makir the sheker of their beliefs. Shenemar, and you can see that this is the context that Yechezkel was addressing, because Vayomer Eli, right, Hashem said to me, the prophet says, Ben Adam Huatzamo Sa'ela Kol Beish Yisrael Hema. These bones represent the Jewish people. Hine Omrim, behold, they say, Yavshu Atzmosenu, our bones are dried up. Avda Sikfosenu, our hope, right, actually this is the phraseology in the Israeli national anthem, right? Od lo avda tikvaseinu. Now, granted, the hatikva was not written by a religious person, but it is based on biblical phraseology, because Yechezkel describes the Jewish people as saying, avda tikvaseinu, our hope has been cut off, so the hatikva is od lo avda tikvaseinu. Okay. Nigzarnu lanu, we have been cut off. Now, it's interesting, I just want to point out that the way Shmuel is darshaning this pasuk is not Pshuto Shel Mikra, meaning the Pshuto Shel Mikra is that Yechezkel is quoting the sense of the national destiny of the Jewish people, that many Jewish people felt, oh, now that we're in exile, we'll never get redeemed. He's interpreting it to mean they specifically said there's not going to be Tchias HaMesim. That's the second opinion. Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar, third opinion. Elu bnei adam she'ein bahem lachluchis shel mitzvah. These were people who didn't even have a little moisture of a mitzvah, meaning these were people who had no mitzvahs at all. And so again, the question is, and that's his interpretation of dried bones, they had no mitzvahs. Now the question would be, so, well, let's go over all the views first, because in other words, we're going to have a whole bunch of views. So again, Rav says the bnei Ephraim, who left Mitzrayim 30 years early. Shmuel says, Bnei Adam Shekafru B'tchias HaMesim. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba says, Bnei Adam that don't have any moisture of a mitzvah, even a little drop of mitzvah, totally without merits. We'll come back to it. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Amar, right, you know, you've heard of this is an Amora. By the way, again, just a little basic information. We know that the rabbis of the Mishnah are called Tanoim, which means teachers. And we know the rabbis of the Gemara are called Amoraim, which just means interpreters, because they saw their role and their tachlis to interpret the teachings of the Mishnah. Right? So the singular of Tanoim is Tana, and the singular of Amoraim is Amora. Now, you may notice, if you look closely, and maybe you discuss this, or either yourself or you discuss it with the Rebbe, that Tanoim are usually called Rabbi something, Rabbi Meir, Reish Beis Yud, Rabbi, and Amorayim are called Rav, Rav Huna, right? Or just Rav, Rav is just the Rav. Even when they don't give you a name, Rav Yudah Hanasi is called Rabbi, and who's the greatest Tana, and Rav, the greatest Mor, is called Rav. However, you sometimes see some Amorayim who go with Rabbi. So for example, Rav Yochanan, although we sometimes say Rav Yochanan, is technically Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish is Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. So the thing that you hear, and I remember hearing it as a kid also, that Tanoim are called Rabbi and Amoraim are called Rav, is not quite true. That the real difference between Rebbe and Rav is not Tana or Amora, but it's Eretz Yisrael versus Bavel. And that is, Rabbi is the title you got when you got real smicha. Now, real smicha means an unbroken line of ordination from Moshe Rabbeinu. Real smicha can be conferred only in Eretz Yisrael. Because even if I have smicha, if I'm in Chutz La'aretz, I cannot make another person Rebbe. Smicha has to be conferred in Eretz Yisrael. So as a result, since most of the Tanoim lived in Eretz Yisrael, if they were ordained, they got the title Rabbi. The Amoraim who lived in Bavel could not have the title Rabbi because if they weren't in Eretz Yisrael, they couldn't get Smicha. But the Amoraim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, they did get Smicha until Smicha got discontinued because the last person that has it was killed before he could give it on. So thus, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, these are the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore they are still called Rabbi, as opposed to Rav Huna and Rav Chista. They were called Rav, they were ordained, just like we're ordained today, much, much greater than we are, but they didn't have the unbroken ordination from Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's a very significant thing, because there's a lot of things you cannot do without that real smicha. You can't be Mekadosh the Chodesh. That's why we have to work off a calendar. You cannot paskin kenasais. So for example, today, let's say, if you stole, a basin could be mechayev you to pay keren. But no basin today could be mechayev you to pay kefel, or you know the 4 and 5, because that's called a kenas. And for a kenas, only a basin that has smicha can do kenas. So even when there was such a basin, there was no kenas in Bavel. And today, because we don't have smicha at all, we don't even have kenas in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that's the difference between Rabbi and Rav. Rabbi means someone that has smicha, real smicha, and Rav is someone who was given permission by his Rebbe to paskin, but he doesn't have real smicha. Yeah.
Would that have any effect on like making us Sanhedrin?
Absolutely. If you want to ask the simple question, why we don't have a Sanhedrin, it is not because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Sanhedrin does not need a Beis HaMikdash, and the Sanhedrin existed many years after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. It is because we do not have Smicha. Now, there was a controversy, I think I may have mentioned it, in the 1500s, in the time of Rav Yosef Karo, based on a passage in the Rambam that suggests if all of the Chachamim agree, they could recreate Smicha by unanimous consent. And the Mahari Beirav, if you've been to Tzfat, there actually is a shul, the Beirav shul, it's now become a site of one of the great Karbach Minyanim in Eretz Yisrael. I actually went there, yes, I was in Tzfat over Shabbos. So I actually went there. In some ways it was very beautiful. It took a long time, God, it was like 4 hours. I mean, they sing everything, they sing like everything. I mean, Nishmas, every line of Nishmas, you know, whatever, but... But Marie Beirav was Rav Yosef Karo's Rebbe, and he was of the view that we could be Mechadesh Smicha, and he actually gave Smicha to Rav Yosef Karo, and Rav Ali Alshech, a few other Gedolim in Tzfat. But because there was a big Machlokas, it didn't go over to the next generation. But you're 100% correct. Sanhedrin does not depend on a Beis HaMikdash. It depends on Smicha. And once you have smicha, you can have a Sanhedrin, and they can make gezeros, takanos. They might even be able to be mavatel some gezeros and takanos. Right? They could, for example, I'll give you a theoretical example. Theoretically, a later Sanhedrin might be able to take away the need to keep 2 days of Yom Tov in Chutz Laaretz, because now that we have email and instant communication, you know, we don't have any type of suffering. But we can't do that now, because once the Chachamim made a Takana, only a Sanhedrin could be Mevatel, that type of Takana, okay? So that's very important. Now there is, there actually is a body in Yerushalayim called Sanhedrin that Rabbi Steinsaltz is involved in or something, but I'm not even sure exactly what it does, and he himself understands it's not a real Sanhedrin, and as I say, there are no Gedolim that have given it any...
They have a website.
They have a website, yeah. But even, I think I did see the website. But, you know, I mean, it basically says, you know, we're not here to do anything, but we just want to raise consciousness or something. So I say he doesn't really consider it to be doing anything. And as I say, no Gedolim have given it any type of Haskama in any way, and for good reason. I mean, Lamaisa, if you don't have Smicha, you can't, unless they're going back to Mari Beirav, which was... a rejected position. Okay, so that's the difference between Rebbe and Rav. So now, so again though, so you'll notice we had Rav, we had Shmuel, we had Rebbe Yirmi. So this is a hint. Whenever you're talking about Amoraim and you see Rebbe, you know they lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rebbe Yirmi Yerba'aba said these are the people that don't have lachluchus of mitzvah. Rebbe Yitzchak, again Eretz Yisrael, Nafcha. Now again, this is also interesting. You've come across in Gemara, Rebbe Yitzchak Nafcha. So it's important to know that Nafcha is a trade. Nafcha means a blacksmith. And you see Rebbe Yitzchak, the blacksmith. And as the Rambam writes, it was the derech of the earlier Chachamim that they did not want to make any money off the teaching of Torah. And they would have another parnasa that they would work for a few hours a day or whatever it would be to make enough to live off. And these were sometimes what you might call blue-collar work. These were physical labor, being a blacksmith, etc. And that's Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. Another example, Rav Yochanan Hasandler. What does that mean? Rav Yochanan the shoemaker. Right? These were the greatest rabbis. Now, it's an interesting question. We don't have that for every rabbi. So is the implication that the other rabbis didn't have parnasa? Like, you know, what did the other ones do? I don't know. But the Rambam just said, Hillel, we know, as a young man, was a woodcutter. Remember, that's a very famous story, that tuition was so high that he had to pay half of his salary to get to the Beis Medrash, and then the other half he would support his family with. But that's my kasha. I actually have a kasha. I have a kasha on the very famous, one of the most famous stories of Hillel is in Maseches Shabbos. And one time he didn't earn enough money to get to the Beis Medrash. So what he did was he went up on the roof. And the roof had like a skylight, so he could look down, and he put his ear to the roof, and he was able to hear the Torah. And then what happened was, it was a Yerushalayim snow, as we had last year, and he finds himself covered with snow, and he's almost dead. And finally, the Chachamim see, it looks like there's something dark up there. There should be some light. And they go up, and they revive him, and he almost died. And it shows his Mesiris Nefesh, right? So the point of the story was Hillel's Mesiris Nefesh for Torah learning. But my question is a very simple question. Halachically, are you allowed to do that? In other words, if the yeshiva charges tuition, the yeshiva says you have to pay to come to hear a shir. So are you allowed to kind of, you know, put your ear to the window and listen? Now maybe the yeshiva shouldn't charge, but lamaisa, if they do charge, what clearly is going to be the answer? So it could be. I was thinking to myself, in other words, this great story of Hillel, I mean, Lachar is a Maisa Gesela. But it could be like this. It could be that they were not charging for the Torah learning. They were charging because they needed to recoup the heat, the rent, the food, you know, the tea. So Mimela, the Pshat is, if you were doing it from the outside, and all you were doing was getting the Torah, and you weren't getting, you know, you got no tea, you got no coffee, you got no heat. So Mimela, even Al-Pidin, Hillel was not Mechuyiv to pay for anything, because he was willing to give up all of the amenities. Now that could be the longest of it, because actually that makes more sense to me, because it's more mistaver that they wouldn't charge for the actual Torah. It's not proper to charge for the actual Torah. Even when the yeshiva charges, essentially we're charging for the you know, the expenses of keeping up a building and everything else. Okay. So what does Rav Yitzchak Nafcha say? Eilu b'nei Adam, again, bad people. Eilu b'nei Adam Shechipu esahechel kulay shgatzim uramasim. These are people who were so disgusting in their attitude towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they covered the walls of the Beis Hamikdash before it was destroyed with rats and rodents and insects. And again, this cross-references an earlier Nevuah of Yechezkel, where he came, he was brought from Babylonia to the Mikdash, and he saw all of the repulsive animals crawling around the Beis Hamikdash. Now again, this doesn't mean they literally brought the animals in, but it means they were doing korbanos with such bad kavanos, they didn't have to serve Hashem, so it's as if they brought repulsive things to the Beis Hamikdash. Okay. So, the question here is this. Why should any of these people be the ones that are the beneficiaries of this great miracle of Tchias HaMeisim? I understand, let's go through each view. I understand Rav's view, that's a B'nai Ephraim, because even though they made a big mistake, but they did have a desire and a love for Eretz Yisrael, and they did believe they were fulfilling Hashem's promise to Avram, because remember, they calculated the 400 years from the Bris Bein Absarim, so they went L'Shem Shamayim, because they calculated. I also understand even the attitude of the people who denied Tchias HaMeisim, because the idea was Hashem will revive them so they'll know that they were wrong. They should have a second that they know that they were wrong. So we understand Rav and Shmuel, Rav in a positive way. In fact, Rav would be the one that says that not only were they revived, but they actually came to Eretz Yisrael, they married, they had children. Presumably Shmuel would follow the view that they were just revived and died right away, because the purpose was not to reward them, obviously. The purpose was that they should just know the MS, and then they die. But then we go to the other views. It's hard to understand why there would be Tchias HaMeisim. Rav Yirmiyah says, people who had no mitzvahs at all. So why do they get revived? Is it what, that they should see the reward that's in store for other people, so they should feel charata? Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, he also basically describes Rishoyim, people who with their thoughts and their heart covered the Beis HaMikdash with rodents and rats. Why would they have resurrection? Again, so it could be that both of these views are basically saying that part of one's onesh, part of one's punishment, is not simply obliteration, but it's to see for a moment what the sechar could have been, and then the onesh becomes much greater.
In the context of the nes, what was it meant to, at least for the
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The simple meaning of the neis is very, very different. The simple meaning of the neis is this is a nevuah of comfort. Because remember, you have to remember the historical period here. Yechezkel is living, Yechezkel was exiled to Babylon 11 years before the Churban. If you remember, the Babylonian exile took place in two stages. The first stage, many Talmidei Chachamim were exiled to Babel, including Mordechai, and Yechezkel was among them. And then 11 years later, there was the Churban, and everyone else was exiled. So Yechezkel is living at the same time of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is the prophet in Eretz Yisrael. Yechezkel is the prophet in Babel. But Yechezkel's mission is to give Jews who are suffering the exile comfort, nechama, chizuk. So the image of the dried bones was simply this. Many Jews felt that this is the first galus they underwent. They think God has rejected us. There is no hope. Our bones are dry, meaning there'll never be a ge'ula. So the mission of the dried bones, the vision of the dried bones, is to tell B'nai Israel that even when you think you're dead, even when you think there's no hope, even when you think there will never be a revival of Am Yisrael in their land, just as these bones came to life, Am Yisrael will come to life. So overall, the Nevuah is a message of comfort to Am Yisrael to give them emunah in the Geula Shleima. Okay, that's the specific meaning of the Nevuah. But Derech Agav, the Gemara is trying to say, who were the particular people that were resurrected? So it's as if that God is kind of punishing them, but by using them to convey an optimistic message to the rest of the people.
And the other thing is, everybody knew who these people were. Like, it wasn't just something more derived.
That I'm not sure. In other words, there's no reason to automatically assume that anybody knew who these people were, except maybe the Navi himself.
Yeah.
The Gemara is identifying them, but as I say, the identification is not necessary for the overall message. In other words, what the message of the Nevuah was designed to convey did not depend really on the identity of the people. It's just that the people should see that Hashem could take these dried bones with no life and revive them so he could take the Jewish people who seemed to be without hope and redeem them. So for that message, I don't need to know who those particular bones were, but the Gemara is filling in the backstory, so to speak, on this. Okay, now we have the view of Rabbi Yochanan, again, in Eretz Yisrael Amora, great Rav Yochanan. Eilu, by the way, Rav Yochanan, as you know, Rav and Rav Yochanan are the very first generation of Amoraim, and in fact, they were the youngest Talmidim of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So their Rebbes were, in fact, the Tanoim. Rav, therefore, did learn in Eretz Yisrael, although he then moved to Bavel and started the great yeshiva of Sura that was around for 1,000 years. That's where the Gaonim were, the great Gaonim, where the Sadia Gaon or Avram Gaon, where the Rashi Yeshiva of Sura. Rabbi Yochanan stayed in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan says that who are these Atzamais that were revived? So these were talking about martyrs. Elu Mesim Shebebikas Dura. These were the dead bodies in the valley of Dura. Now we're going to see a story that Nebuchadnezzar, in the course of his conquests, massacred thousands and thousands of Jews. And we're going to see what the story was, and their mass grave, like Yimach Shemam, like the Nazis, these mass graves of just bones, were in Bikas Dura. So actually, the truth is, Rav Yochanan fits the overall context of the Nevuah actually the best, because it's precisely the victims of Nebuchadnezzar that experience revival and rejuvenation. And here, by the way, it is likely that the Jews were aware of this, because Bikas Dura was a site. It was a site of massacres of a huge Jewish population. And therefore, the Jews were aware of this great sign from Hashem that even those who are massacred are going to have Tchias HaMesim. And we're going to see the story about Bikas Dura, the Yomer of Yochanan, as Rav Yochanan said. Minor Eshel Adrabasi, these are two points in Babylonia. From the river Eshel till the town Rabasi is the valley of Dura. Right? That's the valley of Dura. Again, it doesn't say a lot to us, but the people who heard this understood the points. And what about what happened in Bikas Dura? Bishah Shehigla Nebuchadnezzar es Yisrael. When Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jewish people from the land of Israel at the time of the destruction of the first temple, Hayu Behen Bachurim Shahayu Meganin Esachama Biyafyan. There were young Jewish boys who made the sun look ugly because of their beauty. This is an expression, meaning they were so beautiful that the sun looked pale as compared to them. Now, you understand that this reference to the sun is not simply praising them. They look like movie stars or Hollywood movie stars and the like, but rather the sun represents light. So we're basically talking about the spiritual light. There was a light that came from them, the light of Torah, the light of Kedusha. And it was such a beautiful radiance that it almost made the sun look like the sun had no light. You see this, right? This is an expression we have, hadras panim, the shining of a face. You see, if you see by some gedolim, you can sometimes see, literally, like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone. That was the light of the Shekhinah. That was extreme. He had to cover up his face. All right, so we don't have that today necessarily, but still, gedolim often have it, hadras panim. I remember as a child, when Moshe Feinstein used to visit. I grew up in Connecticut. And he had a relative, and he used to spend, for a few years, he used to spend 2 weeks in the summer in Connecticut. And I remember when I was 8 or 9, maybe 9 or 10, so I had the schus of being in a car with him. We would be going to show together. I was, where he was staying was actually fairly near me. And he used to speak in the Young Israel of Hartford, but, you know, no, I mean, First of all, he spoke in Yiddish. His Yiddish is also was hard to understand anyway, and he spoke quickly, so I didn't know a word of what he was saying. But I could not take my eyes off him. There absolutely was a shining light from his face. I remembered this as a child. So it says these bacharim are meganin asachama biyafyan. Right? They made the sun ugly with their spiritual lights. V'hayu kastios rayanaisa. And the Babylonian women were attracted to this. Such beautiful children, or boys. V'sheifais ivais. And they began to menstruate. There is a concept that sometimes the taiva could cause even menstruation. Amru l'balayin. So they said to their husbands, get us these boys. You see how moral the society was. They basically told the husbands, bring these guys over so we can, be with them. Balayim lamelech. The husbands weren't so happy about that. The husbands complained to the king. And what did Nebuchadnezzar do? Siva hamelech v'harkam. Nebuchadnezzar commanded. So this was not a military activity, so to speak. Just murdered them.
Wow.
He murdered them. We don't know how many there were. Was it 1,000? Was it 10,000? We don't even know. But they were murdered. But I die in Ayushefa Sivas. The women were still menstruating because even in death, the bodies had a radiance. Siva Hamelech Veramsam. So the king gave a part two. He ordered the horses to trample on their faces. So even their bodies were desecrated and defiled by violence. And these are the Mesim that were buried in Bikas Dura, and these are the ones, according to this letter of Yochanan, that Yechezkel revived. Now again, as I say, in terms of the Pshat of what the Nevuah is about, this is actually the closest to Pshat, because once again, the Nevuah is about the Jewish people feeling despondent, that Hashem has rejected us, Hashem has forsaken us. And the Mesim in Bikas Dura might be an example of that. These were tzaddikim, these were holy people. The light of Torah shone from their faces. And look how they were trampled and murdered and desecrated. And Yechezkel says, Hashem will give these people life. He will give all of you life, all of you rejuvenation. Again, it's one of the great, we don't necessarily rate prophecies, but it is one of the great moving prophecies of Geula in the Torah. And it comes up in a lot of ways. It's not only about Mashiach, and of course, ultimately, it's about Mashiach and Tchias HaMesim, but it also is connected to even things like a state of Israel. We are getting into Zionist debates, the idea that after the Holocaust, where the Jewish people also felt rejected by Hashem, Hashem gives them the ability to reestablish a land in Eretz Israel and build yeshivos here and all of those things. All of this is connected. In other words, the Nevuahs don't just happen once, meaning these types of nevuahs occur and occur and occur, and that's kind of the message, that Hashem does not abandon Am Yisrael. Okay. So now, since we talked about Nebuchadnezzar's massacres, we're going to mention other people that Nebuchadnezzar tried to kill and was not successful. And this is, again, one of the famous miracles that we, during Selichos, we always invoke this. We say, Ni Sha'ana, the Hashem, the God who answered Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah, V'toch Kivshen O'esh, Hu Ya'anene. So again, this is the beginning of the Babylonian exile. Nebuchadnezzar is the king. And in the book of Daniel was one of Nebuchadnezzar's advisors, Daniel and his three friends. So each of them has a special rescue story. Daniel, we know this as a kid, was thrown into a lion's den. And he was rescued. That's not the story we're going to talk about now. The other three friends were thrown into a fiery furnace because they refused to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's idols. And they should have been destroyed. But the miracle was that they were saved from the Kivshan Ho'esh. Right? This is Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. So now we're going to connect it, because this is really the same time as Yechezkel. Now, it's interesting. a lot of people in Tanakh are living at the same time, even though there's no, in the Pesukim, you don't see any particular interaction. You don't see Yecheskel schmoozing with Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. And yet, the Torah Shebaal Peh often makes the cross-connection, because in fact, they were living at the same time, and they both were living in Bava. So now you're going to see the connection that the Mesorah gives us. Atanei Rabbanan, B'shoah Shehipim Nebuchadnezzar is Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, but Kivshin O'esh. When Nebuchadnezzar threw Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into a fiery furnace because they refused to bow down to the idols. Actually, the Mefarshim ask Akasha, why wasn't Daniel thrown into the furnace? Presumably, Daniel, in other words, Nebuchadnezzar made a rule that you have to bow down to him. Why, you know, presumably, Daniel didn't bow down either. And he was thrown into the lions then for another reason, a different offense, but not for this one. Where was he? So some suggest that he was simply out of time, meaning he made a decision. Instead of publicly doing this and endangering his life, he thought it would be better, I'll speak kuach nefesh, to simply not be here. Okay, but be it as it may, when they were thrown into the fiery furnace, Omar Leah Kadosh Baruch Hu liyecheskel, leich v'hachiyei meisim v'pikastura. We'll see the significance of this, that the moment that Yecheskel is reviving the massacred Jews in Bikas Dura, the Valley of Dura, that's exactly the same time as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are in the Kivshin HaEsh. Two different places. Kiva Jehichyosam, when he revived those mason, Bo Atzomais, V'tavchalo Liosa Rasha, all of those bones, which are now people, they came. Imagine, it's like a, what do they call it? These zombie movies, when the zombies come back. Return of the Dead, whatever they say. So basically, here you have, it's a big nightmare for Nebuchadnezzar. You know, he kills thousands of these people, and they all show up as he's throwing Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah into the Kivshin HaEsh. But Tovchalo, those Russians, they smack him. They punch him. And they say, Shochika Tamia, you know, you deserve your bones to be ground, Alpanov. Omar, my team, he didn't recognize who they were. He says, who are these guys? I don't even know who these, like, thousands of people are. Omrulo, his advisors told him, well, these are the guys you killed, you know, a while ago. Chavreim Shalevu, the friend of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, namely the prophet Yecheskel, Mechaye Mason, the Bikastura, just revived these dead bodies in Bikastura, and they're coming to punish him. Pasach v'yomar. And because of this, Nebuchadnezzar actually did tshuva. It didn't last, but momentarily, he did tshuva when he saw the miracles of Hashem. And this is a pasuk in Daniel. Now, as you know, most of Tanakh is written in Hebrew, but there are parts of Tanakh that are heavy Aramaic, and these are the books that were written during the Babylonian exile. Really, three books, Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, which are the Babylonian exile books. Well, they're not 100%, but I would say they're around 60 or 65% Aramaic. And it's not the same as the Gemara Aramaic, but it's an earlier Aramaic. And this pasuk is in Aramaic, but it's in Daniel. Asohi kama ravervin. Asohi is osos. God's signs, his wonders, are so mighty. The Simhohi Kama Takifin. Simhohi is his wonders. Kama Sakifin, how strong. Malchusei Malchus Alam. His kingdom is a kingdom forever. You know, Aramaic and Hebrew are close. Instead of Malchuso, Malchus Olam, so Aramaic is Malchusei Malchus Alam. And that's kind of, you know, very close. Now, I do want to point out, this is a difficult Russia, to tell you the truth, because it seems to be changing the pshat of the pasuk for absolutely no reason at all. If you look at the pasuk, Nebuchadnezzar said this after Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were saved from the fiery furnace. And there's no kasha on that. In other words, you don't have to add something else that he saw. When you're saying, why does Nebuchadnezzar say God's signs are so miraculous? Because Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown into a Kivshin HaEsh, and they were saved. If you take out a book of Daniel, that's what the pasuk says. So what hechrich, what problem is there in the pshat that Chazal have to tell us, oh, the miracle that he's referring to is the miracle of these thousands of mesim coming back? Who says the miracle was Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah? So what's the hechrich of this drasha? Let me just see. The Marsha addresses this. Yeah, it seems to be, it's really just from the repetition, because look at the way he says, God's signs are so mighty, and his wonders are so great. Now, if all you have is the single experience of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being saved, that would not be a plural. That would be one miracle. He should have said, God's miracle is so great. The plural implies that there were other things that happened. Besides that, and that was the Trias HaMesim in Bikas Dura. But the Gemara then says the following. This is very amazing. Amar Rav Yitzchak. So the Nebuchadnezzar is praising Hashem. He sees a great miracle. He praises Hashem. Rav Yitzchak says, Yutzak Zahav Reitzeach L'teich Piv Shalaisa Rasha. We ought to pour molten gold down that person's throat. Meaning, we didn't want him to continue to praise Hashem. Why? If the malach didn't come and slap his face and shut him up, because the Nebuchadnezzar started praising Hashem, Bikesh Laganais Kol Shirais V'Sishbachai She'amar David B'Sefer Tehillim. The Nebuchadnezzar was so inspired that his words and his praises would have been greater than David HaMelech had the malach not come and shut him up. Right? Now, the question is like this. The question is, where is the fairness here? I mean, if the Nebuchadnezzar is capable of reaching the Madrega of David HaMelech, so doesn't Hashem have to let him? He slapped him, right? So they say from the Kutzker Rebbe, a beautiful pshat. It doesn't say the Malach. First of all, slapping the face is an odd expression. If you just mean the Malach stopped him, you would say a phrase, the Malach closed his mouth or something. Slapping his face, is not a direct stopping of speech. Kutzker Rebbe says, the greatness of David HaMelech was that even when he was suffering and he was afflicted, he was still able to praise Hashem because of Emunah. Nebuchadnezzar is very eloquent when he sees God's wonders. But once he starts suffering, he can no longer praise Hashem. So the slapping of the face doesn't mean the Malach stopped him from singing. But the Malach is simply saying, you think you're such a tzaddik? Let me give you a little suffering and see how you praise Hashem then. And that, so it didn't stop him. It showed that he was not on the Madrega of David HaMelech. David HaMelech, Nebuchadnezzar, can be eloquent and praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu when everything is nice and comfortable. David HaMelech praises Hashem with all of his suffering. And Halal we read today. Two psukim, which end the same way, but they begin totally different. Kos Yeshuos Esa, or V'Shem Hashem Ekrim. Kos Yeshuos. I lift up a cup to celebrate my salvation. V'Shem Hashem Ekrim, and I call on Hashem. Another pasuk says, Sara V'Yogain Emsa. I find suffering and tribulation. And again it says, V'Shem Hashem Ekrim. The greatness of David was he could serve Hashem no matter what the conditions. And that's what the Kutzker Rebbe says, is the meaning of Ba Malach Usatrei Alpanev. Suffer a little bit, then it's not going to be the same. And then the Gemara goes on, we'll just read one more Braisa. Tanu Rabbanan, Shisha Nisa Nasu Biyosu Ayom, the day of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being thrown into the furnace, there were six miracles that happened. That day. Supernatural miracles. Elohim. The first miracle was Suf Hakifshan. the furnaces they used to build, these were like, these were smelted. Why did they have a furnace? This was not for heating a house. This was a furnace to produce iron, very hot furnaces. So they were really deep, deep pits in the ground, right? Very deep. So, because, you know, if you have a 2,000 degree fire, the fire has to be pretty deep. Otherwise, people at the edge are going to get burned. But since Hashem wanted the whole world to see how the fire didn't affect Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, the furnace was raised up. In other words, because if it just would have been, let's imagine, for example, if it was simply that the next morning they were found okay. Well, people might say, well, you know, maybe the fire was extinguished or there was a secret entrance. Rather, the whole world saw them in the middle of a fire and nothing happened. So miracle number one is the Kifshan got lifted up. Miracle number two, Nifrat HaKifshan, the walls got cracked, because once again, since the Kifshan is a solid thing, if it just, right, these are like solid walls, so even if it goes up, you still have a wall around it, so people are still not going to see, so you needed to make holes in the wall so people could see. That's the second miracle. Third miracle is Humak Suro. Now, Rashi is a very odd interpretation. Apparently, that's called a miracle. Humak Suro means Nebuchadnezzar's, this is almost a bit of a joke here, Nebuchadnezzar's arrogance went away. That's considered to be as big, that's as big a miracle as anything else, that he was Moda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Rashi says. He was no longer, well, he was arrogant the next day, but that day, he was not arrogant. Number four, Napach Selim Alpanav. He had erected a huge, in fact, that's why they were thrown into the Kifshan. He had erected a huge idol of himself that whenever you walked by, you had to bow down to. And as Hananiah and Mishael Azariah were thrown into the Kifshan, that huge idol toppled over. And that was a miracle. Nobody could pull it down. It was too big to pull down. And number five, Nisrafu Arba Malchuyais. There were four kings who were like Nebuchadnezzar's collaborators. Nebuchadnezzar did not die in this, but the four kings who assisted him, they died simultaneously. Now actually, in a sense, this is not automatically a separate miracle, because it actually happened because since the furnace rose, the heat of the fire was able to kill various bystanders. And the bystanders who were killed were these four kings. And the fifth one is the one that says somewhere else Yechezkel was reviving the dead in Bikas Dura. Right, those were five miracles that happened the same day. Kulo Gemara. All of these miracles we only know from tradition. We don't really know that they happened the same day. In other words, the Pasuk does not indicate that the Kifshan rose, and it does not indicate that the walls were opened. Although, Chara, I would say that there is an indicator that Nebuchadnezzar was not arrogant because he did praise Hashem, but still, we don't really see that he became humble. And we also don't know that the Tselem was Napach al Panav. And although we know Yechezkel was Mechaye Mesim, we don't know from the Psukim that it was the same day as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So five of these miracles happening the same day, we only know from Mesorah, tradition. We don't know it from the Psukim. But Arba Malchios, the four kings dying that day, that we know from the Pasuk itself. Dichsiv, because it says, Nebuchadnezzar Malka, again this is an Aramaic verse, Nebuchadnezzar the king, Shalach L'michnash, he sent to gather Achashtar Panaya. Yeah, Persia had a tremendous bureaucracy. There were all sorts of, we don't even know what these are exactly, just like England has dukes and earls and barons and counts. So you see, in the Persian bureaucracy, there were all sorts of officials with, I'm sorry, the Babylonian, not Persian, the Babylonian bureaucracy, all sorts of officials, different ranks of nobility. So just to give you the names. The Achashtar Panaya, Seganaya, Pachvasa, Adar Gazraya, Gidachraya, Disarvaya, Tiftaya. These are, again, you know, counts, earls, dukes. Right, all these, we don't know exactly, but these are ranks of nobility. V'chol sholtanim b'din to all the other rulers of the different provinces. Uchsiv, And it mentions that four of these groups were actually witnesses to the destruction, to the throwing of Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. That is, the Achashtar Panaya, Siganaya, Pachvasa, Hadavrei Malka. Right? These are four ranks. Chazian, Ligavraya, Elif, they were watching these people, and they died as a result. So there were like 10 groups, but four of them were actually involved. So actually, it doesn't seem to be four people. It seems to be four groups. We don't really know how many people in each of these groups. Okay, we'll stop here.